Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Final Girl on 6th Avenue podcast. I am your host, Carolyn Smith-Hilmer, and this week I am so excited to be talking to you about one of my favorite book turned into duo movie ever, which is, of course, American Psycho. And for those of you that have not read the book, I will provide some nice commentary throughout my discussion of the movie to fill you in on the differences. There aren't that many, but there are a few that I still think are worth noting, and you definitely don't need to go read the book unless it's something that you want to do. The subject matter in the book is actually very heavy, and I don't necessarily think that it either adds to or takes away from our understanding of the movie. I know sometimes you can gain like more understanding by, you know, reading the book and watching the movie. You can definitely just get the same, you know, message from reading either the book or watching the movie. So the book American Psycho is our source material, obviously, which is written by Bret Easton Ellis and was published in 1991. The description on the back of the book is as follows. Patrick Bateman is 26 and he works on Wall Street. He is handsome, sophisticated, charming, and intelligent. He is also a psychopath, taking us to head-on collision with America's greatest dream and its worst nightmare. American Psycho is bleak, bitter, black comedy about a world we all recognize but do not wish to confront. Later, this, of course, was adapted into the film of the same name, in which we're talking about right now, directed by Mary Harron in 2000 and starring Christian Bale, Reese Witherspoon, Jared Leto, Willem Dafoe, Josh Lucas, many more. Everyone in this movie, very, very attractive. I think the choice to select a cast of attractive, beautiful people, of course, is not a mistake. And I think having Christian Bale be your lead is, again, certainly not a mistake. So let's get into the movie. Here's the good stuff. The entire tone of this movie is so unbelievably pretentious and materialistic, it's almost uncomfortable to watch, especially if you are not familiar with the world in which these men work. They all work in the finance industry, and they all live in New York. They all live in Manhattan. They all live in beautiful apartments. I think even in the book, Patrick Bateman says, yeah, that Tom Cruise lived in the same building as him. And of course, we don't actually know if Tom Cruise lived there or not, because as you'll come to find out, our narrator is incredibly unreliable. So the movie starts with Patrick Bateman, which is, of course, played by Christian Bale, and his friend group. They're eating dinner at a restaurant, and it's a beautiful restaurant, dimly lit, beautifully decorated, and right out of the gate, they're talking about women. They're talking about women in a sexual way, in an objectifying way. They're making racist jokes. They're wondering why they're not at a quote-unquote better restaurant called Dorzia. These men are so obsessed with their Amex Platinums, it has made me somehow hope that I never ever qualify for one, because I cannot imagine being that pretentious about a fucking credit card. So after dinner, the guys go to a nightclub that to me looks like a shitload of fun. Kind of looks like if Rob Zombie were to ever open a nightclub. It's very carnival, grindhousey, underground, dirty, industrial. Looks like fun to me. If I could ever find this club in Manhattan, I would certainly go. This is where we're set off by Patrick Bateman's behavior. So he kind of, in a weird way, looks kind of spacey at dinner. He doesn't look like he's really mentally present. But of course, we can just kind of write that off as like, okay, maybe he's drunk, maybe he's tired, he works a demanding job, X, Y, Z. But we come to find out that we cannot excuse his behavior. And we particularly cannot make the excuse that he is tired. So he goes to the bar to order a drink at this nightclub and uses a drink ticket. It's like some old lady luncheon situation with the drink ticket. I don't really understand that. But anyway, he goes up to the bartender and the bartender tells him that the tickets are no good and that he actually has to pay in cash. He doesn't want to pay in cash, but does so kind of, like you can tell he doesn't want to do it, but he does it anyway because he still wants a drink. And he gives her the cash and says, "You're fucking ugly, bitch. I want to stab you to death and play around with your blood." And he's screaming it at her because this club is really loud. And only like a rich, coked out white man would say some shit like this. Like, I've never ever thought about saying something like this to someone before. We're not really sure if she hears him or not, but either way, it makes you uncomfortable. And I think it makes me even more comfortable because I have no idea. There's no resolution there on whether or not she actually hears what he says. So the next morning, we get to see Patrick's apartment, which is ultimately my dream apartment. And I cannot keep begging my husband for an apartment like this because he will either kill me or leave me. But anyway, Patrick is narrating his own thoughts in the movie. So we're given kind of the inside scoop of that really disturbing, beautiful mind of his. And he's talking to us through his exercise routines, his diet, his grooming habits, his expensive skincare products, all the while he's kind of getting ready for his day. During this routine is where Patrick tells the audience that there is not really a quote unquote me, but rather that he is simply an entity. So it's kind of like this weird juxtaposition that he's looking at himself in the mirror, right? So he sees that he is a person, but he is telling us that he doesn't really have like a conscious mind and that he's kind of on autopilot every day. So after Patrick gets ready, he's leaving, he's obsessed with his Walkman and he is listening to music a lot actually during the book of the movie. He loves Huey Lewis and the News and Phil Collins, and more often than not, the music is actually really happy, but we know that our man Patrick does not actually feel happy because he doesn't really feel feelings. Like we said already, he mentions himself as an entity, but not a quote-unquote me. So the music feels very odd. I think at one point in the book, he's listening to Walking on Sunshine, which is just so bizarre. But anyway, Patrick works at a hedge fund, and his assistant Jean is in love with him, and he makes sure to let us know that. And Jean is, of course, absolutely beautiful, but Patrick doesn't like her outfits. Much like I am sure is true, Patrick tells Jean to tell anyone that calls that he is not in the office, and then he turns on the office TV to Jeopardy. And he also makes a comment about her appearance, about her clothes. She is beautifully dressed, but he tells her not to wear that outfit again, and that she should show up tomorrow in heels and something that fits her body, more tightly. It's not that her outfit is ugly, like I said, it's just, it doesn't show off her physique. Next we meet Evelyn, which is played by Reese Witherspoon. This is Patrick's fiance, and we find out that Lewis Carruthers and Courtney Rawlinson are going to be having a dinner party together. So Courtney and Patrick are actually having an affair, and Courtney has a serious pill-popping problem. Patrick says he is on the verge of tears when they get to the restaurant because he is so worried they won't have a good table, but they do get a good table, so he stops being a baby. The next day, we see Patrick screaming, arguing with an Asian woman at a dry cleaner's. The item he wants to have treated is a sheet with enormous red stains on them, and we all know what the stain is, or we assume we know what the stain is. But we know Patrick is a shithead, and he says some really insensitive remarks to this Asian woman who owns the dry cleaners about the way that she talks, and makes fun of her because she doesn't speak English. He then says the stain is crayon apple juice, which, looking at his body in this movie, he would never be caught dead drinking something with that much sugar in it, but whatever, that's what he says it is. Patrick is then planning to meet up with Courtney, so this is the woman he's having an affair with. He's on the phone with her, and his apartment with a pornography movie is playing in the background, and asks her if she wants to meet up for dinner. He wants to take her to Dorsia, which is the restaurant that we mentioned at the beginning, and he calls to make a reservation. But when he does, the restaurant host starts laughing at him on the other end of the line because it is the hardest restaurant to get a reservation in the city. So he still tells Courtney that they're going there, even though Patrick was humiliated by the hostess of the restaurant and they are in no way going there at all. So he still tells Courtney that that's where they're going, and Courtney is so high, you know, out of her mind, that when they show up at Barcadia instead, she doesn't even really notice, and Patrick is able to talk her out of thinking that they're at Dorsia. Lewis was out of town, that's Courtney's partner, and since Lewis was out of town, this meetup was made possible, obviously. So when Patrick and Lewis see each other soon at work, he thanks Patrick for looking after Courtney and is so impressed that he was able to take Courtney to Dorsia. They then talk about clothes and Valentino and other surface level bullshit that nobody cares about, especially their business cards. And Patrick is instantly heated because he thought that his card was the best. And it turns out that Paul Allen's card is incredible. So Paul Allen is played by Jared Leto. And throughout this movie and throughout the book, like just throughout the story in general, Paul Allen is a recurring theme. Patrick hates Paul Allen, and we don't really know why. Like, we know why he hates him. He hates him because he is envious of what Paul Allen has. Paul Allen has some high-level account at their company, at their firm, and being that they work in finance, it's really important to get these high-level accounts. So Patrick didn't get it, and actually it was given to Paul Allen, so he's jealous of that. He's jealous that everybody talks about how much they love Paul Allen and nobody talks about how much they love Patrick. And he just wants to have one, like, good thing, I guess, to talk about that doesn't include, you know, being compared to Paul Allen. Like, he wants to be better than Paul Allen. So they all are, like, taking out their business cards and him and all of his friend group. And, like, Patrick thinks that his is the best. He just got a brand new one and, like, the font. And they're talking about all this random stuff that I have no idea about. And essentially somebody pulls out Paul Allen's card and it is absolutely incredible. And Patrick is instantly pissed. So on his way home, Patrick berates a homeless man after the man asks for money. And Patrick takes a knife from his briefcase and stabs the man and stomps on the man's dog and kills it. So there is definitely some animal violence in the movie. There is far more animal violence in the book. So if that is something that you are not okay with, do not under any circumstances read the book. You will not be happy with yourself. You will be very upset. But like we said, you know, he does step on this man's dog and kill it. And Patrick is so vain that he kills a dog and a homeless man to death and still has to wake up the next day, right? And go to the salon to get a facial and a manicure and tan in the tanning bed, all while narrating that his, quote, nightly bloodlust has overflowed into my days. I feel lethal on the verge of a frenzy. I think my mask of sanity is about to slip. He later goes to a Christmas party where his sociopathic social skills are really put to the test here. He does not give a fuck at all that his fiance Evelyn is there because he actually came to say hi to Paul Allen. Evelyn in this scene is hosting this like amazing party, and she has, it's a Christmas party, so she has like people dressed up as elves and people in costume, and she has mistletoe everywhere and there's catered food, and she's holding a pig, which is kind of odd. It's like a teacup pig, very tiny. And Patrick is absolutely disgusted by the fact that she has this pig and she's holding it, and he wants absolutely nothing to do with it. But like I said, Patrick came to the party to talk to Paul Allen, so it really has nothing to do with the pig. He finds Paul Allen, and Paul Allen thinks that Patrick's name is Marcus and that Marcus's fiance's name is Cecilia. So Paul Allen cares so little about Patrick that he thinks that Patrick's name is actually Marcus and that Evelyn's name is Cecilia. But Patrick goes along with it because he wants to get Paul Allen to agree to meet him for dinner next week. The restaurant they go to is an absolute hole in the wall that someone like Patrick and someone like Paul would never, ever willingly eat in. But Paul is there, he shows up, and he's already mad at the restaurant because Patrick is super late and jokingly says that he is a child of divorce and asks for Paul to give him a break. Everyone in the book is obsessed with Ivana Trump. I don't really know why, because nobody seems to like actually know her, but it's more, I think, about the status of like, okay, Ivana Trump hangs out here, and so, you know, to be seen with her or somewhere where she is a status for them. So they're obsessed with Ivana Trump, and in this shithole restaurant, Patrick asks Paul if Ivana Trump is at another table, in which Paul looks at him like he's absolutely insane because she would never eat there and she's not there. But anyway, the restaurant is called Texarkana. I think that's hilarious. Texarkana, not my favorite place in the world. But for the second time, Patrick says something that we're not sure that another person heard. So, like, he was at the bar when he was talking to the bartender, and he said that he wants to cut her open and play with her organs or whatever. Now, he's talking to Paul, and he looks at Paul, and he says, quote, I like to dissect girls. Did you know that I'm utterly insane? End quote. And Paul, again, doesn't seem to hear him. Or maybe he did hear him, and he just doesn't care. So it's almost like we saw it at the bar, and we see it again. We're kind of confused. Do people hear him when he says these things? Or is Patrick not actually saying them? Like, it's so bizarre. It's so weird. But anyway, Paul compliments Patrick on his tan. And Patrick is like, oh, well, thanks. I go to the salon. And Paul, again, tries to one-up Patrick by saying that he has a tanning bed in his apartment. So, you know, he has a better business card. He gets better accounts at work. And now he has a tanning bed in his apartment, but Patrick has to go to a salon to tan. So Patrick looks like he's about to shit his pants because of how mad he is. But then Paul asks about Cecilia, which we all know is actually Evelyn. And Patrick says, I think she's having dinner with Evelyn Williams. Evelyn, great ass. She goes out with that loser Patrick Bateman. What a dork. That's what Paul Allen says back to Patrick. So Patrick laughs it off because, again, he, you know, met with Paul under the pretense that his name was actually Marcus and that his fiance's name was Cecilia. Super weird, whatever. Patrick laughs it off and gets Paul another absolute martini. Patrick gets Paul rip-roaringly drunk and takes Paul back to his apartment. There are newspapers taped all over the floor of the apartment, and Paul is stupid drunk, just like laying in a chair, and you can just tell, like, he doesn't even know where he is. So Patrick obsesses over music, and in the book there are literally entire chapters dedicated to the discography of certain bands like Huey Lewis and the News and Phil Collins. So Patrick puts on Huey Lewis and the News, Hip to Be Square is the song, and tells Paul about what he thinks of the band. And Paul absolutely does not care, like, at all. He couldn't care less. He's so fucked up, he has no idea. And he's, like, looking around the apartment, and he's like, you have, you know, these newspapers all over the floor. And he actually says, do you have a dog? Because he's so confused. And I'm kind of thinking, like, wow, that's so stupid. Like, if somebody's apartment looked like that, I probably wouldn't go inside. But anyway, it's a movie. Anyway, they're listening to Hip to Be Square. Patrick puts on a raincoat and takes a Valium and is literally dancing around the apartment. And it's weird because he walks up to Paul Allen and then kind of is like, oh shit, I forgot something. Well, we can tell that he's putting on this like plastic clear raincoat because he's about to get dirty. It's not raining outside. And so he is like jumping around the apartment, dancing, and finds an axe that he left conveniently in the kitchen and says, hey, Paul, and swings the axe into Paul's face. Paul then gets decapitated, and Patrick is screaming at him, try getting a reservation at Dorzia now. Okay, so now we are at a point where he's killed his enemy, basically, and he is then tasked with taking the body, you know, out of his apartment. So he's dragging the body through the lobby of his building in a black bag, and just looks like a standard like black bag, but there's blood trail, you know, being left behind him from the bag, and the doorman looks at him and is kind of like, what the fuck? Like, what the hell? But anyway, Patrick goes outside and he hails a cab and he starts stuffing the bag into the trunk, but someone from the sidewalk calls and says, Patrick, is that you? And Patrick answers, no, Lewis, it's not me. Like, Lewis Carruthers was walking on the sidewalk and saw him. So he's like, no, Lewis, it's not me, you're mistaken. He introduces Patrick to an attractive Asian woman and says, you know, we're going to this restaurant, so-and-so's dad is buying it. Oh, where did you get that overnight bag? And he's looking at the bag with Paul Allen's dead body in it, and Patrick just kills it here. He's like Jean-Paul Gaultier, and he just like slams the trunk of the car and hops in and heads out. So Later on, he goes to Paul's apartment and he says, quote, "I almost panic when I realize that Paul's place overlooks the park and is obviously more expensive than mine," end quote. So he's still jealous. Even now, Paul is dead and he is still jealous of the apartment and everything else about Paul's life. So he does his best to like pack a bag and make it look like Paul left, and he leaves a voicemail and says that he moved to London, or that he went to London for a few days, I'm sorry, and takes the briefcase that he packed of Paul's clothes and leaves. So then the next day, or the next time we see Patrick again, not doing criminal activity, he's in his office and he's listening to Lady in Red on his headphones, and Jean comes in and tells him that there's someone named Donald Kimball who's there to see him. We learn that this is Detective Donald Kimball, and Patrick is like, tell him I'm at lunch, and Jean is like, well, it's only 10:30, so I think he knows that you're here, like it's still morning. So Patrick is like, okay, well, I guess go ahead and send him in. So anyway, they are talking, Patrick and the detective, and this is Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe is playing the detective in this movie, and it's a fitting role for him, actually. He does really well. And they're talking about Paul, and they're talking about, like, how it's so weird because, like, one day you see someone, and the next day you don't, and you don't know where they are. And, you know, the detective is like, well, his family wants to keep it quiet because we don't really know, like, where he actually is. And it's a whole thing. And so, anyway, Patrick makes up, like, some lie, like, okay, well, I really have to get over to, you know, the Four Seasons, and the detective is like, isn't that a little far uptown? You're probably going to be late. And Patrick is like, no, there's one down here, like by my office, which is just like such a bizarre exchange. Like he just wants to get out of the room. Like he doesn't want to do that anymore. So now we see him again, cut to he's at his apartment again. And he's like doing a bunch of stomach crunches while he's watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and does some jumping rope. So nighttime again now, not a good part of town. He sees a beautiful blonde woman in a coat, and she is a hooker. Like, we can infer that she is a lady of the evening, and she is standing in front of a warehouse on, like, a street corner. She looks like an experienced hooker, which is fine, obviously. Like, get your bag. But Patrick, like, makes note of this. Like, they oddly pan in on her face, and it looks like they made a great attempt to age her. So Patrick is in the car, he's in a limo. Patrick rolls down the window and he says, I haven't seen you around here. And she's like, oh, well, you haven't been looking. And he's like, oh, well, would you like to see my apartment? And she's kind of like, maybe, maybe not. But he holds out some money and asks again. And she's like, I'm not really supposed to, but I can make an exception. So it's kind of like, we can infer that there's like a hotel nearby that maybe her and her pimp or her boyfriend or whoever looks after her, like waits for her at. So he tries to joke with her and he says, do you take credit card? Just joking. Like, it's so weird. And he's trying to be normal, you can tell. But he opens the door, invites her in. They drive away. They go to an apartment. Okay, Patrick makes a phone call on a very large, like, cordless phone. Like, it's so large, it doesn't even look real to me. So weird. And he hangs up. He tells the hooker that he picked up that his name is Paul Allen and that he is going to call her Christy. So whenever he's on the phone, you hear him talking like he's like, I'd like a girl, I want a blonde girl who does, you know, couples. And he like really stresses like, I want a blonde woman. So he calls another woman to come in for this. Okay, so he has the hooker that he picked up, whose name is Christy, and he's waiting for another woman to appear. At Patrick's apartment, he pours some mineral water into a bathtub where Christy the hooker is bathing. She's taking a bath. He tells her to take a bath. She's drinking some champagne, it looks like. But then he says, that's a very fine Chardonnay. And I don't know if that was like unintentional or not, but That always just seemed so weird to me. But they're playing music, and the song is called If You Don't Know Me By Now. It's kind of in the background, and Patrick is still in a suit and bow tie, which is, of course, very strange, because why is he still dressed up? And he tells Christy that he wants to wash her her feminine areas, which, again, not, like, super weird, but kind of weird since he's still in a suit. And, you know, tells her what position to be in, and he compliments her body, and the phone rings, and it's the second girl that he ordered to his apartment in the lobby. So the doorman sends her up, and he tells Christy to dry off, choose a robe that she likes, and then head into the living room. So he opens the door for the second girl, and he takes off her coat, says, I'm Paul, and he's introducing himself to all these women as Paul, I guess because he doesn't want them to know his actual name, and says that he's going to call the second woman Sabrina. He's automatically upset because he asked for someone who is blonde and did not receive someone who is blonde. Like, she's not platinum blonde. She's kind of like dirty blonde, which her hair is still light, so I don't know, whatever, he's weird. And he asks the girls if they want to know what he does for a living, and they both are like, no, like they don't care. They were there to make money. They're there to perform a task and leave. He tells them anyway where he works, so like they don't really have a choice, but he says, I work on Wall Street. Like, all like, you know, oh, you should be impressed with where I work. And he's like, I work on Wall Street. He's like, I work at Pierce and Pierce. Have you ever heard of it? And Sabrina shakes her head no. And Patrick is like upset. And because like he wants to be impressive and these women have no idea what he's talking about. And, you know, Christy says, we have a really nice place. How much do you pay for it? And he gets upset again. And he's like, well, actually, Christy, that's none of your business. But it wasn't cheap. And so Sabrina starts to take a cigarette out, and Patrick's like, nope, you can't smoke in here. And then tries to like salvage this weird interaction by offering them some truffles. And he's like offering the women more Chardonnay. He goes over to the stereo. Now he wants to listen to Phil Collins. So they're going to listen to a Phil Collins CD. And is talking about, you know, the music and whatever, like it doesn't matter. And he proceeds to have sex with both women. Like, he literally talks about the music for a long time, like a way too long. But anyway, now he wants to have sex with them. He gets them in the bedroom. They have, all three have sex with one another. And now they're all sleeping. And Patrick sleeps with, you know, one woman on both sides. So like he's in the middle, and Christy is on one side, and Sabrina's on the other side, whatever. And he gets woken up at some point, like in the middle of the night, early morning, and Christy touches his arm. And at this point, he says, don't touch my watch, which is so weird because, like, Christy's actually sleeping. Like, she's not looking to steal anything, but okay. So he makes it a point to say, don't touch my watch, which, in case you didn't guess this already, it's a Rolex, by the way. And in the book, it's referred to as his Rolex, not his watch. He makes it a point to tell everyone what brand everything is. He gets up out of the bed, though, at this point, and goes over to his dresser. And the women, they kind of get up, they start to get dressed, like thinking that they're done and that their night is over. But he actually opens a drawer in the dresser, and there's like carving tools, sharp objects, scissors. He grabs a coat hanger, which is kind of, again, why? The girls are like, hey, like, can we go ahead and go now? Like, they need to get paid. And he says, we're not through yet. Later, we don't know how long they were there, he gives them the money and walks them to the front door. And they like, take the money super fast and leave. They're crying. One of the girls' nose is bleeding. He closes the door. They leave. Okay, super bizarre. Now they're at, now Patrick and all of his friends are at dinner. They're having drinks. So Patrick and his friends are having drinks, and they're talking about like, oh, well, like, what if this woman has a good personality? And what if this woman is this? And what if this woman is that? Like, they just talk about women so strangely. And Lewis goes to the bathroom at this point, and Patrick goes with him. Like, he follows him to the bathroom. So then Patrick puts on some gloves, like leather gloves, and he goes into the bathroom. It's a really nice bathroom. But anyway, he walks up behind Lewis. So Lewis is peeing at a urinal, and Patrick walks up behind him and puts his hands around Lewis's neck. And at the same time, Lewis turns around and looks at Patrick's hands, takes one of the gloves off, and starts to kiss Patrick's hand. It is such a great moment of just pure comedy, because why in the world has Lewis been doing this? Like, it's so weird. Has he been feeling this way for a long time? He never said anything. And so, you know, Lewis is thinking, like, this is a time for him and Patrick to get together. And Patrick is like, no, absolutely not. And so anyway, Patrick freaks out, doesn't finish the job, doesn't kill him. And Lewis is like, I want you. And Patrick is like, no, like, I have to return some videotapes. Like, I have to leave. And he runs away. Super hilarious scene. Again, super bizarre. So he leaves. He doesn't say anything to anybody else. And cut to Patrick walking down the hallway to his office. The detective is back again talking to Jean about, like, any reservations that Paul Allen might have made, because, you know, they still need to find out where he is. And Patrick is like, yeah, you can come to my office, like, let's talk. So then the detective's asking him some more questions, like, do you remember that night? Like, what were you doing? And Patrick's like, oh, I was probably returning some videotapes. He looks at a date book, which is blank, and he just, like, makes it up. And he's like, I had a date with a girl. And the detective is like, well, that's not what I have. And Patrick is like, what are you talking about? And he says, that's not the information I received last time, or, like, from whoever I got. And Patrick's like, oh, like, well, maybe I could be wrong. Like, maybe I wrote it down wrong. The detective is like, well, when was the last time you saw Paul? And Patrick's like, well, we went to a new musical called Oh Africa, Brave Africa. We had dinner, I think. It's been a long day. I'm a bit scattered. And then, like, they start talking about music, and they start talking about Huey Lewis in the news. So weird. And then they want to meet up for lunch next week. Very bizarre. Patrick and Courtney have sex. He gets up and starts to put his clothes on. And Courtney looks really sad, and she's like, would you call me before Easter? And he says, well, maybe. And she says, what are you doing tonight? And he says, well, I'm having dinner. And she starts to smoke, and Patrick's like, well, I never knew that you smoked. And she said, well, you never noticed. Listen, Patrick, I want to talk to you. And he says, well, you're beautiful. There's nothing else to say. And just kind of shuts her down, and it's really, really sad, actually. And he says, you're going to marry Lewis. And she says, well, isn't that so special? If I don't see you before Easter, have a nice one, okay? And then he just leaves. It's super sad. She has a really emotional connection with him. He may not have an emotional connection with her. We don't really know. Now they're at a club again. Pump Up the Volume playing. They're talking about STDs. They're doing coke. They get into a weird, like, little bathroom scuffle about doing coke, which, I mean, I can only imagine that, like, coke doesn't make those encounters more enjoyable. Now they're on a balcony of the club. Song is What's on Your Mind. There's three women, they're blonde, by the way, just in case you were wondering, are sitting across from Patrick and his friends. And so one of the guys is talking about how Gorbachev is downstairs and that one of the other guys went to go sign a peace treaty. Super weird. Obviously, Gorbachev is not downstairs. You know, Patrick starts tapping his nose. They're talking about coke. And one of the girls says, I thought he was in mergers and acquisitions. Patrick says, well, ask me a question, because, like, they're all just sitting around. And one of the girls is like, so what do you do? And he says, I'm into, well, murders and executions mostly. Like, it's so subtle. You're like, did I even hear that? The girl just, like, is like, oh, well, do you like it? Like, she totally skips over it. So weird. So bizarre. So anyway, on the street, Patrick and the girl are talking, and she's a model, and he's, you know, kind of talking to her. And she's like, well, you think I'm dumb? You think all models are dumb? It's okay if you do. It won't bother me. And he's like, no, I really don't think models are dumb. And so they get in a car and they leave. Okay, so cut to now. We don't know where the model and Patrick went, but now he's on a couch that's in his office, and he has his sunglasses on, looking hungover as ever, and his assistant Jean knocks on the door, and he's like pretending to do something now. Like, he picks up a piece of paper and starts twirling a pen. And she decides to like ask him, you know, what are you doing? Doing a crossword. They are making small talk. And, you know, he's like, well, did you want to go to dinner with me? Would you have dinner with me, Jean? So they decide they're going to go to dinner together. He's like, well, you can go anywhere you want. And of course she picks, you guessed it, Dorzia. Then he comments again about her outfit. Like, you might want to change before dinner. You might want to pick something else to wear. And she kind of doesn't take it a weird way. She's like, fine. Then we cut to Jean at Patrick's apartment. Looking beautiful. She's, you know, complimenting everything in the apartment. He offers her some sorbet, which is kind of weird, but she wants to eat it. Like, she wants some. She is probably famished. And it's funny because when he opens the freezer to get the sorbet out, there is a severed head in there, which is hilarious. And no one else seems to notice it, but we do. So he gives her the sorbet, and then she, like, asks him if he wants a bite, and he's like, nah, I have to watch my figure, blah, blah, blah. They're just sitting there hanging out, talking, and he picks up it's so bizarre. He picks up, like, a nail gun and puts it to the back of her head, but he doesn't actually go through with, like, hurting her. But we're all just kind of holding our breath because it's so bizarre. And, you know, he lures women to his apartment so he can kill them, and he doesn't want to kill her. And it's just very strange. And while Jean's sitting there this whole time, the phone rings, he picks up, it's Evelyn. And now Evelyn is like, oh, well, like, you never called me, and we're having dinner tomorrow with so-and-so, and we're meeting here, and I'll see you tomorrow. And Patrick's like, yeah, okay. And Jean is like, hey, is that Evelyn? Like, I didn't know you guys were still together. And Patrick is kind of embarrassed, and finally he's like, I think, and she's kind of just like feeling awkward about it, and she's like, you know, I'm sorry, I can leave if you want. And Patrick is like, yeah, you should probably go because I don't think I can control myself. And what we know about that is that, you know, he's gonna kill her. So she leaves. Cut to like a restaurant, and Patrick and the detective are eating and they're talking. And he's like, you know, what did you do the night you disappeared? Did you figure anything out? And he's like, oh, like, I took a shower, ate a snack, didn't do anything else. Nothing really comes of this. Now we see Patrick in a limo, and the part of town he's in is kind of like where he found Christy, so we can kind of infer that he's probably going to look for her again. He like pulls up to her, and she's like, no, like, I don't know if I want to do this. I had to go to the emergency room last time. And he's like, no, I promise it won't be anything like last time. Just come in the limo. You know, we'll talk for a second. I have a driver. He's right here. I'm not going to hurt you. He holds out some money. She takes it. You know, he's like, you're beautiful, you look great. And she's like, I might need surgery after what happened last time, and people are telling me that I need to get a lawyer. And he's like, oh, you know, lawyers complicate things. And he's writing her a check. She takes it, and she starts running from the car, and the car keeps pace with her, and she kind of slows down to a walk, and Patrick is like rolling down the window, and he's trying to talk to her and get her attention. And he's like, look, I'll give you half now, and I'll give you the other half later. And he's like, again, your name is Christy, and we're going to be meeting a friend of mine, and her name is Elizabeth, and she'll be joining me in my new apartment, and you will like her. So they're at Paul Allen's apartment. Patrick is like, oh, great opportunity to do some drugs. They're going to do drugs together. Well, I don't know if they're going to do them together, actually, but Patrick is for sure going to do them. He's going to do some X, and he opens a bottle of wine and puts the ecstasy, like, crushed up into the bottle of wine. So now there's a redheaded woman in a silk shirt and a black jacket, and she is on the couch sitting across from the other woman. So she's sitting across from Christy. She's like, oh, you look familiar. Did you go here? I think I met you. Blah, blah, blah. They don't know each other at all. They've never met. Talk about drugs for a little bit, and then they're like, okay, like, come on, like, let's have sex. And so they all start to have sex again. I don't know what it is with Bateman and these like group sex situations, but he really likes them. So they're having group sex. The drugs kick in. He puts on Whitney Houston. Loves Whitney Houston. Who doesn't? At this point now, Patrick is under the like covers, moving down Elizabeth's torso, and she's like laughing, and it's all in good fun. And then it gets down to he's gonna go down on her, right? We infer this. And then she starts screaming, and there's blood everywhere. Patrick like looks at Christy with all this blood on him, and she's absolutely terrified. Obviously, she tries to leave, and Patrick chases her butt-ass naked with like some shoes on. She like is running as fast as she can through the halls of these apartment, mazes of doors and hallways, and Patrick is running at her with a chainsaw. And she runs all the way down the staircase, and he throws the chainsaw down at her, and it hits her perfectly in the back of, like in her back. And he's screaming at her, like he's won, he's in victory, whatever. No idea what happened to Elizabeth at this point. So we have two dead girls, and no idea what happened. Patrick is drawing now on a tablecloth with a crayon at a restaurant with Evelyn. And it's a drawing of an impaled woman with a chainsaw. Evelyn is getting under his skin. You know, he breaks up with her. He's done. Like, he doesn't want to talk to her anymore. Doesn't want to talk about her anymore. Wants to cut the whole thing off. He's done with it. Now, Patrick then proceeds to go on some, like, craze of what the fuck. He, like, starts by getting, you know, money out of an ATM, and the ATM says, feed me a stray cat. He sees a stray cat, he picks up the, or he tries to like, I don't know, he tries to make sense of the situation, and he tries to put it in the ATM slot, but the cat pushes itself away, so he pulls out a 9, points it at the cat's head. So somebody walking by sees, and she's like, what are you doing? Stop doing that. And so he kills the woman. Okay, then he tries to steal a car, and there's police everywhere, right? So he's trying to do all these things. He killed someone, he tries to steal a car, and every car on the street is locked. He kicks the back of a Porsche, runs. So he's setting off like alarms so that way he can get away from the cops. He's running behind like parked cars for cover and then firing at the cops. And then he hits one of them. Then he, you know, keeps shooting at both police cars. There's multiple now. There's a massive fireball explosion. He's like so excited because he got so lucky. And then he like looks at his watch and just walks into the lobby of an apartment. And somebody greets him and says, burning the midnight oil, Mr. Smith. Don't forget to sign in. So bizarre. So he pulls out a gun and shoots the man at the door, because why would you ask him to sign in anywhere? And then he goes around a revolving door and then shoots a janitor. And then he goes out the other side of the building and, you know, he's smiling at the doorman and he reaches into his pocket, signs the paper, goes up the elevator. He's crying now. He reaches his office, but then he's looking out the window and hiding because now there's like helicopters and he's crying and he's freaking out because what did he do? He makes a phone call and he calls his lawyer. And he's like, Harold, you know, you're my lawyer. I think you should know what I did. He's like, I killed a lot of people, man. He talks about all the people that he killed, plus some more that we don't know. And he's like, I have videotapes of a lot of it and some of the girls have seen the tapes. You know, so-and-so's body is dissolving in Hell's Kitchen in a tub. And the next morning, he showers and picks a suit from his closet like he does every day. He goes to Paul Allen's apartment and puts on a mask because the smell of the bodies, like he's expecting it to be really strong because he left a bunch of bodies there. But then he goes into the apartment and it's, you know, it looks like it might have been under some like mild cosmetic renovation. And there's a realtor there and he's like, what happened? Like, we don't know what happened. You know, I had all this stuff here, it's gone. And she's like, okay, well, like, don't come back. Like, she asked him if he saw an ad for the apartment in the New York Times. And he's like, yeah, I saw it in the Times. And she's like, I didn't post anything in the New York Times, so you need to leave. Okay, he leaves. Then he calls Jean, because Jean is the one woman in his life that, like, he doesn't absolutely hate. He's crying, and he calls her a dumb bitch, and she's like, okay, I don't know where this is coming from. Like, so-and-so called, and they just want to meet you for drinks. And he's like, just say no, like, say no, I'm not there, I don't want to meet them, like, and he's like, stop sounding so sad all the fucking time, like, she's so concerned. So then she goes to his desk, Jean does, and she, like, the big drawer in the front, she opens it, there's a leather notebook in there, and some of them have, like, appointments on them, and then she finds a drawing, because why has he been drawing stuff everywhere? He finds a drawing of someone getting killed, and the person in the drawing has a shotgun in their mouth. So then now he does end up meeting his friends for drinks. This is, by the way, the appointment or, like, drink schedule that Jean wanted to set up for him, but he yelled at her for, so whatever. But anyway, he goes, and while he's there, he sees Harold, his attorney. So when he sees the attorney, he goes up to him. All the while, this is cutting back to Jean, who is, like, working through Patrick's fucking notebook of scary stuff, and there's women, you know, with limbs missing and chainsaws and naked women, and there's women nailed to boards, and there's, you know, pages full of, like, some, like, rape fantasy, murder family, or murder fantasy, just crazy, terrible things, and she's horrified. Patrick is, like, talking to the lawyer, and the lawyer is like, oh yeah, like, that message you left me last night was absolutely hysterical. And he's like, what? You know, he's so confused, and the lawyer is, like, not really understanding what's going on, and he's like, he finally, like, is like, okay, like, there's no way that this isn't real, so I'm going to talk to him about Paul Allen. So Patrick is like, I decapitated Paul Allen. Like, I did it. I'm Patrick Bateman, and I killed Paul Allen. I know where his head is. He's like, the entire, you know, message I left on your machine last night was true. The lawyer is just staring at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, he still is, like, under the impression that, like, this voicemail was a joke. And he's like, look, like, it's not possible that you killed Paul Allen, because I had dinner with him twice, 10 days ago in London. So pretty much after this, Patrick walks away. His lawyer, after seemingly not even remembering who he was, kind of laughs it off and leaves. And Patrick does the same. He goes and sits back down with his friends. When he gets to the table, he's laughing uncontrollably and maniacally and proceeds to give us a little bit of internal dialogue by saying, my confession has meant nothing. And that's where the movie ultimately ends. So now for the discussion about the movie. I think personally that, and you guys can totally disagree with me, but I personally believe that none of the things ever happened. Because if you think about how, for example, he got back to Paul Allen's apartment and there were no bodies there. The realtor said that no Paul Allen ever lived there. Where did all the bodies go? Where did Paul go? How did the lawyer have dinner with him 10 days ago? Whenever he meets his lawyer, Harold, in the bar that they're at in the final scene, Harold doesn't even remember Patrick's name. Harold actually calls him Davis and says that the voicemail that he left was hilarious because Patrick Bateman is such a dork and would never actually do any of that stuff. Oh, and then there's the fact that Jean finds his journal with all of the drawings in it. Like, I think this is all just in his head. This never actually happened, and maybe he was documenting it on paper as a way to, like, play it out in his mind, but I don't believe that any of this ever happened. The main reason being that there's no way that the lawyer could have had a meal with Paul Allen just a mere, you know, 10 days ago or last week if Patrick had actually gone through with, like, the murder. And there's also the fact that whenever Patrick was talking to Paul Allen, Paul Allen didn't even call him Patrick. He didn't even know that was his name. He called him Marcus. Like, I find it very interesting that throughout the movie and throughout the book, they never actually refer, like, the people that Patrick is either, like, looking for validation from, right? Like, he's looking for validation from the lawyer, and he's kind of looking for validation from Paul because he wants to impress Paul. With the lawyer, he just wants to feel, like, validated and heard that, you know, he got the voicemail, he believes what was said, he wants to help him try to figure it out. So these are two people in his life that he really wants, like, validation of some kind from, and they both call him by a different name. Like, why do they not know that his name is Patrick? Like, we know his name is Patrick, but why do they call him something else? And why do they both, Paul Allen and Harold, call Patrick Bateman a dork, he's a loser, like, they don't have anything nice to say about him, so it almost makes me feel like this man that we know to be Patrick Bateman, this man on the screen that we're looking at, Christian Bale, beautiful, gorgeous, he is not Patrick Bateman. He is what he believes Patrick Bateman is and not an actual person. Because he even tells us, I am not human. He says, I am an entity. He's giving us these clues all along the way. That's why, for me, I personally do not believe that any of that stuff ever happened. I have read some other interesting ideas about it, that maybe, like, he killed actually everybody but Paul. So that way, like, it was easy for the lawyer to say, like, oh yeah, like, I did just have dinner with Paul recently. And that's why, like, nobody believes him when he says that he killed Paul Allen, because, like, he never did. And that he killed everybody else. Or I've read some ideas where, like, he did do all of it and nobody really believes him or really cares that he did it all, because, and this is kind of like the whole point, I think, of the movie anyway, is that nobody cares what you do in your free time. Nobody cares if you're a good person. Nobody cares if you're, you know, murdering people on the street. Nobody cares if you spend every day at, you know, the homeless shelter volunteering, because as long as you look the part, no one cares what you do. As long as you look perfect, hang out at all the best restaurants, drink at all the best bars, be with the prettiest women, have all the expensive drugs, wear the designer clothes, nobody cares about anything else that you're doing. Every single conversation throughout this whole movie and in the book are so surface level that you never find out anything about any of the people. They even talk about other people on a surface level. So, like, they talk about women, they only talk about, like, their body. They don't talk about women in any other way. They don't talk about, like, their friends or anything in any other way other than, like, oh, like, Paul Allen got the big account at work. Like, they don't know anything else about these people. So that's why I think it's so interesting also whenever we're watching the scene where they're in the bathroom, Lewis and Patrick. I think that scene is so interesting because we learn a little bit about Lewis there in that moment. We learn that he's been having feelings for Patrick. And we're not really convinced throughout the whole movie that any of these people actually have real feelings toward anyone or anything at all. Because they're just kind of perfect shells of humans. They're not really human in the sense that they experience, like, normal everyday emotions. Like, I think anger is really the only, like, you know, true emotion that we see. I think that's what makes the scene in the bathroom between Lewis and Patrick so much more interesting. Because we do see, for the first time, Lewis, and anybody in the movie really, be vulnerable with somebody else. And I think that's so important, especially because Patrick is not capable of being vulnerable at all. So this is a very nice, like, little twist for us. And in the book, they even take it a step further. I mean, in the book, Lewis, the same thing happens, right? Like, he is overcome with joy whenever Patrick approaches him in this manner in the bathroom, when he thinks that, like, there could be some feelings there. Of course, we know that there's not, and that Patrick was trying to murder him, but that's neither here nor there. But in the book, I mean, they take it a step further. I can't remember if Patrick is shopping at Bloomingdale's or where exactly he's shopping, but while he's shopping, Lewis has actually just been following him to try to get more closure, like, on the situation. So it's really funny that Lewis is, like, this one character in the book and the movie, just the story, that seems to express some sort of vulnerability. Lewis also is one of the only people in the story who wants to be like Patrick. Lewis is constantly asking, like, where he got his clothes from. Lewis is constantly asking him questions about himself and, like, where he gets his haircut and, like, how he styles things. Like, Lewis very much idolizes Patrick Bateman and wants to be him. And I think that's, I think it's actually really funny. Nobody else seemingly wants to be like him, right? Patrick always wants to be like other people, but seemingly no one wants to be like Patrick. And that is likely very difficult for him because he expresses himself as a bit of a narcissist where he's looking for the opinions of others to validate his own feelings about himself or to gain any positive feelings about himself. And this is in a book that I'm reading right now called Should I Stay or Should I Go by Dr. Romani. She is a psychologist, but she studies narcissism. And one of the things that she talks so much about with narcissism is that when the narcissist completes or achieves something, they are not capable of being happy for anyone else. When they achieve, they derive their feelings of empowerment and positivity and their opinions of themselves from other people. Patrick wants the outside world to see him as the hedge fund prince, you know, who has a tanning bed, gets manicured, gets facialed, works out every day, never does anything wrong, never kills people, would never commit an act so heinous, would never have a dirty apartment, would, you know, never be caught dead in sweatpants, you know, out on a rainy day. He wants to appear to the outside world as this perfect human. I think what's also really interesting that Dr. Romani touches on in her book is that the narcissist also is not capable of being happy for anyone else. So for example, Patrick is talking about how with the business card, like he's immediately pissed because he knows that Paul Allen has the better business card. But Patrick's business card is a great card. Like there's nothing wrong with it, but because people are enamored with Paul's card and not his card, he instantly has hate toward that person and wants to take that person down. Last thing I'll say about Dr. Romani is that she does also discuss in her book that narcissism is on the rise and has been for quite some time. And the idea of materialism kind of shows through in narcissism a little bit, because if you're so concerned with the image that you have and how other people will perceive it, then, you know, we can directly take that and apply it to clothes or apartments or jobs or whatever. But particularly throughout the 90s, materialism was at like an all-time high. People were just purchasing and wanting and needing and like doing, you know, these are unnecessary purchases. These clothes, they don't get you really anywhere in life, right? But it's just a status. And more than that, it's like these people felt the need to do it on such a consistent basis that it became such an observable phenomenon that Bret Easton Ellis sought out to write a book, which would consequently be American Psycho, about these people and these types of people. Whenever Bret Easton Ellis was studying to write the book, he moved to New York and started following around like a group of finance type guys in their 20s and 30s. So Bret Easton Ellis would ask these guys, like, what do you guys do for work? And they'd just be like, oh, well, we work in finance. Which, if you know the finance industry, you know there's so many different types of jobs that you can have, but they chose to just simply say finance because it was, again, so surface level. They wore beautiful clothes. They were so concerned with where they were going to eat dinner together. They were so concerned with the women that they were potentially dating or talking to. They were so concerned with everything about their appearance and their image that Bret Easton Ellis was like, I have to write a satire about this and make this man, you know, my main character, this man who nobody cares that he's a complete and insane psychopath, because as long as he looks the part, no one's going to dig any deeper than that. And I think it's such a great social commentary. On top of that, I do want to comment, final note, about this shebang. And one thing that I really do wish that Mary Harron would have included in her film version of American Psycho, no hate towards her, she's absolutely phenomenal, just a note that I personally would have liked to have seen. Throughout the story, there's this obsession with Dorzia, right? The restaurant that no one can ever get a reservation at. So again, like, we don't even know if that restaurant is real. Like, that restaurant could have been totally, like, made up. So I could see how one person in Patrick Bateman's friend group said, like, oh, I want to eat at this place called Dorzia, and then it's never actually a real place. Like, they just want to eat somewhere that's not real because they're too, you know what I mean? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But the one thing that I do kind of wish they would have included in the movie is, so there's one point where he decides he wants to call up an old college girlfriend named Bethany, and Bethany is an attorney now, and their relationship was very different than any of the ones that Patrick had really ever had. So Patrick would write her, like, love letters and stuff, but I guess the love letters, we as the reader know, like, they were at first nice and pretty, and then they turned into, like, super scary, I'm gonna kill you and eat your insides, you know? But he, to him, like, they were love letters. He invites her to meet for lunch one day, and he's, like, asking her about her life and what she's doing, and he's, like, hoping to maybe, like, rekindle their friendship or maybe relationship. And during this lunch, he finds out that Bethany is engaged to a chef, and Bethany's fiance is the chef at Dorzia. So that sets Patrick completely off into a rage. He invites Bethany back to his apartment, and she's like, oh, I don't think it's a good idea. Like, I think, you know, I should probably just go home. I shouldn't probably have met with you anyway, being that I'm engaged. And, I mean, we all know where that goes, right? So they went back to his apartment. He killed her. Was so disgusted with her because of who she was engaged to, and just so upset that as soon as he found out that her fiance, soon-to-be husband, was the chef at the restaurant he could never eat at, he had to kill her in just the most gruesome way. I mean, from what I recall, he ties her to, like, a board with her arms and legs nailed down, and he takes a rat that he had been starving in his bathroom sink, I believe, for a while, like a few weeks, and inserts a tube, like a clear tube, into Bethany's vagina, and puts the rat in the tube, puts his hand over the other end of the tube so the rat can't go out, and the rat actually is so hungry that it goes up Bethany's vaginal canal and eats its way out. So very disturbing. There's also a lot more animal violence in the book. I'm actually glad that that's not in the movie because I didn't even like reading about it. It was definitely like, Also in the book, a lot of cannibalism. Cannibalism is kind of an thing for me. When used appropriately, it can really convey a strong reaction. I personally have a hard time with it. So selfishly, I'm happy that it's not in the movie, so I didn't have to actually see it played out. But I think that note about Bethany is really interesting. And also, Patrick's apartment in the book is really gross. Like, it smells bad. He has, like, rotting women and body parts, like, all over his apartment. He decides that he wants to, like, cut off the thigh of one of the women that he's killed and roast it like a pork roast, and he is like complaining because he's never been taught how to cook a pork roast, and it's so bizarre, so just all over the place, so amazing, so brilliant. But I just to really drive home the point of the materialism, I mean, there's parts in the book where literally at the beginning of every single chapter there is a discussion of who is wearing what brand from head to toe. Like, they make it a point to talk about what everyone is wearing at all times, how everybody looks at all times. It's very much so this, like, consumerism idea. And this even started in the 80s. There were, like, zombie movies. I can't remember the name of it, but there's a zombie movie that takes place in a mall. Chopping Mall. Yeah. So Chopping Mall is a social commentary about consumerism. This has been going on for quite some time, but I think having one that was set in the 90s really was almost like more relatable because me and other people my age, and even people that are just slightly older than me, we resonate more with the 90s time period than we do with the 80s and the 70s time period. So just a modern, buttoned up, polished version of a social commentary about consumerism and classism and materialism. And I think it's all just absolutely brilliant. So you'll have to let me know what you guys think about the ending. I personally think that he never did any of it. That's why the lawyer at the end was so confused. And also, let's not forget, he says his confession meant nothing, right? So his confession meant nothing. Why? His confession meant nothing because he didn't do it. It was just a joke. Like, he really believed he did all these things, but the confession means nothing if it never actually occurred. You'll have to let me know what you think. I think it's ambiguous on purpose. I think it's ambiguous on purpose. And I don't think that there needs to be a definitive answer, because I like the idea of waking up every morning and getting to contemplate it with a fresh mind. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm very excited to be on Apple Podcasts now. I am hopeful that we can continue to do this every week. I'm going to try to post every week as often as I can. Sometimes I might post more than once, and sometimes I might post every other. It just depends kind of what's going on in my life, because I do have a 9-to-5 and a life outside of this. Unfortunately, I wish I could dedicate all my time to this, but I can't right now. But thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, next week I think I'll be talking about, I'll try to do another thriller probably next week. But if anybody has suggestions, you can email me at finalgirlon6@gmail.com. So that's finalgirlon6@gmail.com. I don't have social medias yet for the podcast, but I'm working on that. That'll be coming soon. And all my sources that I used for this episode are going to be linked in the episode description. So make sure to check it out if you want to read any of those articles. They're very good. Thanks so much for listening. I will see you guys soon. It's your final girl.